Today on Tim and Sid, the rest of the NBA has a few Raptors circled for the trade deadline.
The Coyotes circle back on Taylor Hall.
Done. And circle the wagons. The Buffalo Bills.
Here we go, Timmy.
Are headed to the postseason.
Here we go, Timmy.
10-win Buffalo Bills. Oh, yeah. And Taylor Hall got traded, not to a Canadian team. Next, Tim and Sid.
Not going to Edmonton, eh?
Hashtag Tim and Sid. Of course, I go by the name of the kid. Famous Swag. This here is the Tim and Sid Show. You are now tuned in, coast to coast, entertaining the masses. Sports entertainment.
Yeah.
It's about to get started. Sit back, enjoy the show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Tim and Sid for this Monday, December 16th, 2019, live from the Tim and Sid Studios in downtown Toronto. This is, fittingly, Tim and Sid. I'm Tim McAlf, and this is my friend and co-host, Sid Cicero.
Kind of a busy day all of a sudden, Timmy.
Yeah, it did.
Mm. You can interact with the show now and at any time on Twitter and the gram, as the kids say. Address is the same, at Tim and Sid. We also have a Facebook page and the ability to stream this show through the Sportsnet app or wherever you get your favorite podcast, you can find us. I guarantee you that. Coming up over the next 2 hours of TV and radio live, we will discuss the 10-win Buffalo Bills.
The 7-win Dallas Cowboys.
Future of Eli Manning.
Cheating.
The New England Patriots.
Panic in Edmonton.
Panic in Vancouver.
Taylor Hall rumors.
The Raptors rumors.
And the Raptors and Cavs on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. But that all right now takes a back seat because Taylor Hall rumors have become Taylor Hall realities, Sid Cicero. The deal is done. The one speculated upon on Saturday night headlines, Hockey Night in Canada. Elliot Friedman has been all over this from the very start. Just after 4 Eastern, he said, and I quote on Twitter, "There is word this afternoon that a New Jersey, Arizona are working on closing a Taylor Hall deal. That deal has in fact been closed."
Hey, listen, here's an FYI for any of you listening or watching at home. When one of the quote-unquote insiders said nearing a deal, it's damn well done.
Near done?
You better pay attention, because that's not a courtesy heads up. That is, there is something coming down the pipe, or pike as they say, and Freed was correct on it. Taylor Hall on the move.
New Jersey Devils tweeting it out, so it has become official. Taylor Hall and Blake Spears to Arizona in exchange for a first-round pick in the 2020 NHL draft. Third-round selection, which is conditional in 2021, can become a first-round pick, according to reports. Kevin Ball, Nick Merkley, and Nate Schnarr are the others going the other way. There was a lot of speculation on whether or not they would end up getting the New Jersey Devils and Ray Shiro. The top two prospects from the Devils, which are Barrett Hayden, Victor Soderstrom, they get neither, but they get the third and the fourth in Ball and Merkley, respectively.
For Arizona, this is quite something here, right? They got Phil Kessel not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is a different type of John Chayka, the GM of the Coyotes and Arizona Coyotes that we're seeing. They're currently atop the Pacific Division.
Right.
This is a team that has Darcy Kemper, one of the best goaltenders in the world, dare I say. And defensively, there's at least right now, there's only two teams better defensively in terms of total goals allowed in the league, and that's the Islanders and the Dallas Stars.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a team that has a lot going for it right now, as the Edmonton Oilers know and some other teams know in that Pacific Division.
Right.
They're quiet, but they carry a big stick. For them to bring in Taylor Hall is fascinating to me, Tim. As you just illustrated, this was no small price for a future unrestricted free agent.
Right.
This was three prospects, potentially two other first-round picks that are conditional. And, again, for a guy who's about to walk. Now, maybe what we don't know is, yeah, maybe the Coyotes are kind of keen on signing Taylor Hall. I don't know. But I haven't seen this, Tim. I can anticipate there are parts of Oilers Nation in this moment on social media that are a little pissed off at this. Because you got Taylor Hall going back into the division now. Taylor Hall was linked. Last time I checked, the Oilers don't have a lot of depth offensively. They could maybe use another guy. And this was not a topic that hadn't been broached by a few people, including our own Elliot Friedman, over the last couple of months. I'll say this to any Oiler fan who's not happy with this. Relax. Because if he doesn't sign with Arizona and goes somewhere else, Taylor Hall, having been a former first overall pick, will be on four teams by the time he's 29.
Mm-hmm.
What does that tell you?
I'm not sure what it tells you, because there's two sides to Taylor Hall, and you can't be a kind of sort of superstar. But what we've seen from Taylor Hall is that he has as many Hart trophies as he does playoff appearances.
That's true.
That's true. I'm not going to blame him for his teams not being good, but there's something to listen. I don't know what the end result in all this is. And when you have six goals, if he was playing in a Canadian market right now, he'd be getting killed.
Oh, yeah.
But he's coming off of an injury. He's also had now, if you add Rick Tocchet to the mix, 9 coaches in 10 NHL seasons. Like, it hasn't been the model of consistency. And we're not sure what the outlier is, if 2017, 2018 is the outlier. Or, I mean, you look at those numbers, and he had 39 goals, 54 assists in 2017, 2018.
What a season.
And then the season before, he had 53 points total, 20 goals. The year after, obviously, banged up, comes back this year, hasn't 6 goals in 30 games. So there's a lot to Taylor Hall, and I'm not so sure the Oilers fan is all that upset, because word was they had no interest in trading Evan Bouchard, and no. I'm not sure that anyone in Edmonton wanted them to give up defensive prospects for Taylor Hall.
That's the last thing you do if you're the Edmonton Oilers, considering what you're trying to get accomplished.
I was trying to find this poll. David Staples, Edmonton Journal, put it up on December 14th. How disappointed will you be if the Edmonton Oilers fail to bring back Taylor Hall? Would you be surprised if not in the slightest was winning that poll or won that poll over 3,000 votes from seemingly Oiler fans at 49.8%, a wee bit 37%, and I will burn with anger 13%. So the not in the slightest.
I will burn with anger. That's quite a suggestive option there for anybody.
To
any
the
poll.
I will burn with anger. I mean, it's basically 50-50.
Yeah, I'm a little. I listen, man. We all
two
know.
Options to the negative, one option to the positive.
We know how passionate Oiler Nation is. And how little playoff action they've seen over the past several years. What's 12 or 13 years without playoff hockey?
Right.
I'm a little surprised at that. But the other side of me that, again, is kind of losing a little faith in the Taylor Hall story isn't that surprised. Look, aside from that one massive year in Edmonton, aside from the MVP year in New Jersey, what are we talking about? A 20-goal guy who can't really play in his own end. That's not unheard of in this league. There are a few guys that fit that bill.
I also don't know what he's played with in his time.
Correct.
I mean, they've had talent in those Edmonton years, but they weren't good teams.
And again, not only did he win the MVP in that 2016-17 Devil season, grab the team by the neck and drag them to the postseason. There was not a lot of help around him on that roster to begin with anyway. So I credit what he's done. Again, this is a young man who might be looking at a fourth team after the season before he's 29 as a first overall pick. I don't know how you classify bust. Some of you say, well, he's got a Hart trophy. He's not a bust. That's a fair argument.
Right.
But don't tell me. No one can convince me this is an over-the-top, get-him-to-where-they-need-to-be move by the Arizona Coyotes. And based on the haul that was given up from GM John Chayka, that's kind of where he's going here. This was not a small price to pay for a guy who was about to walk from his contract.
Let me add from Elliot Friedman. No extension is a part of this trade. Mm-hmm. New Jersey retains 50%. Now, they weren't paying anybody. So, I mean, outside of PK Subban, they weren't paying a lot of money out. So they could afford to do that. And that's why the haul is as good as you see for Taylor.
Stop it. Stop it, McAuliffe, with the puns and the hang.
However, if you are an Oilers fan or a fan of a Canadian team that you thought might be able to get him, that is a big part of this, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And having the cap space to fit him in, even though they are retaining 50%, Randy writes in and says, great news for Oilers. Hall doesn't win, and there are better fits for this team out there. Peugeot, Kreider, at the price of 3 prospects and 2 high picks, with an exclamation point at the end.
I don't disagree with it.
CJ Chris Johnson is going to join us a little bit later on. We will discuss the breaking news once again. Taylor Hall has been traded to the Arizona Coyotes in exchange for a lot.
Are Habs fans upset today? I don't know. I think they might be the same as Oilers fans right now.
Yeah, and they're the ones with the cap space that people keep asking them to move. And you brought up what Mark Bergevin said earlier today, which I think is fitting in this moment. Yep. And I don't remember it, so I'm just going to point to you and say it again.
Pressure's on me, McCall.
Do you remember it?
How dare you ask me to bring up something I brought up earlier? So they're in Vancouver right now, Canucks and Habs tomorrow night. Mark Bergevin, for whatever reason, spoke to the media in Vancouver as far as humanly possible away from Montreal is when he did. Oh, we have the clip. Let's hear from Mark Bergevin. He tells it better. This is about selling the future for
mortgaging
the now.
And the future,
There's one thing I could tell you. I will not mortgage the future of this team just to hoping to make the playoff. Because, again, I can't sit here today to tell you that I'm going to make one move that's guarantee us to make the playoff and I'm going to sell the farm for it. I will not do that.
All right, he knew he was out on Hall when he said that, right?
Yes.
He knew Hall was already traded to Arizona.
Again, I don't want to gloss over this. He's as far away from Montreal as humanly possible and then speaks to the media thing, which I find kind of funny.
Well, no, but
I don't know why he would duck the media. I'm not suggesting he would duck the media, but I find that funny in a market as tough as Montreal.
Someone asked him to speak.
I know, but it's funny to me that it wouldn't be in Montreal, and it's like in Vancouver.
All right, CJ later coming up with a full breakdown. And speaking of clips, I want to play you a clip. Speaking of trades, I want to play you a clip about another trade.
I brought the Bergevin thing up to McAuliffe earlier. He brought this up to me earlier. I completely missed this yesterday. Raptor fans, this is juicy.
Woj and Lowe show yesterday, friend of the show. Adrian Wojnarowski and Zach Lowe had their first NBA trade season kickoff show. And the Raptors were front and center on this show. Now listen, before we play this clip, understand that part of the reason they are doing this show is to drum up interest in their coverage of the NBA trade deadline. Also understand, Woj is one of the very best insiders in any sport. Am I wrong on that, Sixero? And does not throw poop against the wall just to throw poop against the wall. But here is Adrian Wojnarowski on Kyle Lowry's future as it pertains to the future of the Toronto Raptors.
When Masai Ujiri gave Kyle Lowry that extension before the season, one more year, took him out of this summer's free agency, $30 million. There was really one reason for him to do it. It made him easier to trade because now teams have him under contract for another year. You know they want to re-sign Fred VanVleet, who'll be a free agent this summer. I just think Toronto, look at the potential free agents. Marc Gasol is in the last year of his contract. Serge Ibaka in the last year of his contract. And Kyle Lowry not probably a part of their future.
What do you make of that? Just stirring it up? Or is there meat on that bone, Sixero?
Well, it depends on who says it.
Meat on the bone.
Like, if you say to me, Ken Reed told me that, I'm like, whatever. Right? But the guy who's saying it is not Ken Reed, who is a better basketball insider than people think, by the way. Shout out, Kenny. The fact that Adrian Wojnarowski, and a man who you are correct in saying, is the best insider, pound for pound, in any North American sport. Mm-hmm. God bless all of them. God bless all the hockey guys, Rosenthal, Heyman, all of them. Schefter, Morosi eats everyone for breakfast, lunch, and dinner because he's just that crazy with it.
Wojnarowski.
And
I think all. You said Morosi.
I said Morosi?
Yeah. Why?
Morosi? I put Morosi ahead of Wojnarowski.
You got to love
friend of the show. Yeah. All right. Like I said, Wojnarowski is the best insider. I think all other insiders would acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. So for him to say in their kickoff to the trade season, and for those who don't know, the reason it's the kickoff to the trade season in the NBA is as of December 15th, teams are allowed to trade a guy you signed as a free agent in the offseason, mm-hmm. which is like 30% of the league. So that's why it's kind of a significant moment to NBA insiders.
I think that explanation on Lowry's extra year actually making him more valuable for trade is an important one.
Correct.
Because I think that most fans in this market, Canada, Toronto, don't get that.
Right.
They thought when Masai Ujiri signed him for $30.5 million for next year, that guaranteed Lowry was going to be here. And the American media looked at that and said,
wait a second.
That makes him more valuable in a trade because he will be an expiring contract next year.
But you do have some control, right? It's a little from column A. This is why the contract's tasty. A little from column A, a little from column B.
Cost certainty is column A, and expiring contract is column B.
Well, cost certainty, and he might help you.
And he's good.
If you're a contending team for the next year and a half, he can help you. But he expires for the Giannis offseason of 2021, and he gives you that cap space, and it's a lot of cap space he would free up. There's a lot of pluses with trading that deal or acquiring that deal. Definitely.
Sam Amick's going to join us a little later. These are just stats. Don't hate on me, please. These are just stats.
Why would I hate on you?
The Raptors are 8-6 when Kyle Lowry plays this year. They are 9-2 when Kyle Lowry does not play this year. Over the last two seasons, they are 20-8 without Kyle Lowry.
Just numbers.
Just those are stats.
What were the Raptors without Kawhi in the regular season last year? 17-4?
I think 17-5.
17-5. Damn it, McAuliffe can't give me one stat. 17-5.
17-4. I don't care.
No, it's 17
just
and 5.
Do it.
You're right. It's 17-5.
Who gives a bleep?
Just numbers. But look, I mean, the reality is, what are the Raptors now? Fifth in the conference after this little swoon?
Yep.
They won over the weekend. I understand that. Beat Brooklyn. Play the Cavs tonight on Sportsnet 1. Let's say the Raptors, the trade deadline, by the way, is February 7th. Friday, a Friday trade deadline. Friday, February 7th in the NBA. The Raptors are 7th. The Toronto Raptors are 7th in the Eastern Conference.
I don't care where they are.
But Masai might. The fan base might. You don't care where they are on February 7th if you think the right business decision is to potentially move on from certain guys.
Do you know why I don't care where they are?
Shoot.
You can't write anything off with Masai Ujiri. He was rewarded quite handsomely the last time he showed a lot of couillons when making a deal, right?
Yeah.
When he showed the guts to make a deal for Kawhi Leonard, he was handsomely paid off. And I think that many in the NBA world believe that Kyle Lowry's extra year was so that Masai Ujiri could do just this. And you better figure out whether or not this team is good enough to be buyers at the deadline or sellers at the deadline. And I don't care what position they're in, Masai Ujiri will This is like, and I hate to do this, Sixero, but these three guys going into free agency, if you include Kyle Lowry in his extra year on this, and Serge Ibaka.
Fred VanVleet.
Who is that? Fred VanVleet, you can throw him, and that's four, if you want. But I think that the Raptors want to re-sign him and would do it if they knew they could right now.
And I think he wants to stay here.
Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, Kyle Lowry remind me of Jose Bautista, Josh Donaldson,
what are you doing?
And Edwin Encarnacion with the Toronto Blue Jays.
What are you doing?
And
right
when
here?
You look at them, you better know what the bleep you're doing. Otherwise, you could be stuck middling.
It's a great analogy. Here's the difference I would say to you.
Okay.
The centerpiece of both teams in those moments are different. The Jays basically did that to keep the party going.
Right.
And we've talked to Ross and Mark enough to know that's exactly what they were
that's
doing,
they did,
slash were told by to keep the party going.
Mm-hmm.
Masai has this
who wants the party to stop?
And who wants the party to stop? Well, when you think you're not going to be good anymore and old, maybe you have the party stop. Whatever. Masai has this Pascal Siakam kit, right? OG Anunoby's not of that ilk, but he's getting better. I don't think Norman Powell's ever going to be consistent, so I'm going to leave Norm out of this. But we don't know exactly how this is going to play out in terms of Siakam being the core. I just think the Jays didn't have a core and didn't handle that in any way, shape, or form, a young core, the way they should. The Raptors are in a bit of a different boat here. And I don't know which way Masai would go. But to your point, do not underestimate Masai Ujiri. And dare I say, that Kawhi trade may hurt him here. How many GMs around the league want anything to do with this guy?
The other part of this equation that we haven't brought up is Giannis more likely to stay given the way the Bucks are playing? We learned that from Kawhi Leonard. Sam Amick will join us coming up top of the hour. CJ before the top of the hour on a Taylor Hall deal. We haven't even talked NFL, and it is a Monday.
The Bills, Timmy.
Circle the wagons for the Buffalo Bills. We'll do all that next with the lead right here on Tim and Sid.
The Patriots are cheaters.
A few things going on right now.
We already knew that.
Whoo! There's some fire on the internet right now, 6-0.
Oh, really? Really?
So Mark Spector, who works in Edmonton, comes on the show, works for Sportsnet. There's a lot of people tweeting at him right now. And Joe, wrote into him and said, save the beautiful excuse for when the team doesn't make the playoffs for the millionth year. Mark says, it's hard to preach patience in Edmonton. I get it. But making the wrong move today because you made the wrong moves for the past 10 to 15 years is not the answer.
Mm.
And that seems to be the argument going on right now in Oiler country.
I would agree with Mark Spector here. Look, the way it's been happening is not the way. And if Ken Holland is sitting there looking at the landscape with an asset to deal in Jesse Puljujärvi, by the way, who's not coming back.
Is that an asset?
I don't know. He hasn't been awful in Finland. All I'm saying is it's an asset.
He hasn't been awful.
It's an asset.
In Finland.
In Finland.
Right.
Which obviously translates to the National Hockey League, as you know.
Of course. Yeah,
all guys that come from the Finland First Division are stars. as we've talked about numerous times.
Mm-hmm.
But look, the Spector's point here is completely valid in that you can't let a panicky feeling in this four-game losing streak and having not won consecutive games since that five-game winning streak to start the year feeling dictate policy like this.
Right.
I know what's going on in Edmonton. You know what's going on right now. They're sliding a little bit. They look like old Edmonton. The goaltending's not good. There's zero contribution from anyone else outside of Leon and Connor. I get it.
Juggling lines.
Dave Tippett juggling lines tonight before the game in Dallas. Ken Holland's job is to stop the insanity and make a move that matters.
Susan Powder, was that her name?
Power or Powder?
Powder.
Susan really was Susan Powder.
I think it was Susan Powder. Although, I could be wrong.
I'll take your word for it.
Powder.
I agree with Spec. I think Oilers...
Stop the insanity!
What was the context of that again?
Is it the insanity or the madness?
I think it was the insanity.
She's helping people get better lives through weight loss, I believe, Susan.
Really?
Powder, yeah.
I disagree with that completely.
Okay, so
I think you need to eat more in life.
So you've got one. Yeah, we know that. You've got one side of it with Spector. Troy's got another side.
Mm-hmm.
Funny how the Edmonton Oilers fans are content with being 20 years into a rebuild. Got to save those draft picks. Let's see if Connor can be as patient.
Well, listen.
Doesn't that play into the mania that is oil country these days?
Yeah, but I mean, are we there?
No, of course we're not there.
We're obviously not there.
But how long do you want to test the patience of the best player on planet Earth if you are consistently rebuilding?
Listen, I'm no rocket surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I know. If that team goes 5 straight years without making the postseason, Connor McDavid's going to be on his phone to his agent. Does anyone want to dispute that? Does anyone want to dispute that? 5 straight years of playoffless hockey in that beautiful new arena in downtown district.
Well, they're on one right now.
Right. But I'm saying 5 more years.
4 more years.
4 more years.
Beyond
whatever.
On this one.
In 2 more years. Let's bring it closer to home, Tim. Let's get real interesting with
all right.
it. No, I'm serious. In four or five more years.
Right.
You think he's sitting there going...
No, there's no chance. But
I know where that sentiment is coming from. It's not a micro... It's more of a macro,
Correct. And
I agree with it.
Correct.
As much as I agree with Spec's feeling now on this.
Right.
Taylor Hall is not the hockey player people think he is. He's not. He's not putting Arizona over the top. He's not helping the team win 2 playoff series. He's not. So be patient now.
I'd like to see him play in more than one playoff.
Well, me too. And so with Taylor, and so with the Oilers. But the Connor thing is legit. That point is real.
Franco writes in and says, how did New Jersey fall like this from an incredible run 2 years ago to getting rid of their best player and Hart Trophy winner? It's not often that you trade Hart Trophy winners. Like, that doesn't happen every day.
No.
Carl writes in and says, I'll tell you what you get with Hall, an eventual exit.
Wow.
And then he's got the gif of Brady looking for the high five. And finally, Budgie writes in and says, starting the team building to bring Matthews home? In Arizona?
Oh, Austin Matthews.
Oh, it took a little
time. I get it. Now I get it.
It didn't take as long to get it back to the Leafs and Matthews going home to Arizona.
Because you knew it was getting...
Your boy Budgie.
Every time the Coyotes do anything, it's will Matthews go there one day?
Let's get to the NFL. We've only got 12 minutes for the NFL.
There's a lot. Yeah,
and there's so much going on, so let's get to the lead in the megaphone. Brought to you by our friends at The Space for Rent.
Tim and Sid.
You've been voting all day. Sportsnet.ca/vote. We had 3 options. Wild NFL Sunday, 2 NHL last night, 3 Raptors host the Cavs, and judging by the fact that I said we're going to talk NFL, I knew the vote was going to go to the
you
NFL.
Were a little birdie in your ear,
because I had already seen it.
A little birdie in your ear,
and someone just told me it. 58% voting for the NFL, so let's get there. A wild and crazy day in the NFL. Finishes galore. Multiple teams punching their ticket to the postseason. Five, in fact, punched their ticket to the postseason just yesterday. Four spots remain. Let's begin with one of, I don't know, like there's a 45 Queen Cities. Buffalo is one of those Queen Cities. So we'll begin
with
the Bills.
They love the Queen City in Buffalo.
But there's love, like, I think Cincinnati is also a Queen City.
The Queen City, I believe, is the largest city in a state that's not the capital, I believe, is what the Queen City is.
Right. So yeah, there's a Queen City in every state.
No, essentially, yes. But right, Buffalo doesn't have that much, so they're like, we got to be a Queen City.
All right, fine. Josh Allen and company took care of business in prime time with a 17-10 victory.
It's the largest city. See, there's a capital city.
No, that's what I'm
and
saying.
Then there's
Cincinnati
a large, it's
is
just a large. It's like, hey, look at us, too. That's what the Queen City is. It's right, really neat.
Hey, we're here, too.
The Queen City. We got wings, and we're Queen City. Look at us.
I know there's a New York City, but we're big, too.
Guess what? Guess what else we have? Salino and Barnes.
Forget it. The Bills have punched their ticket to the postseason. They're 10-4, first 10-win season since 1999 for the Buffalo Bills. Are you ready to buy in to the Buffalo Bills circling the wagons?
What specifically do you mean?
Well, do you think that the Buffalo Bills are, one, full marks for 10-4, two, have a chance in New England next week, three, might win a round or two in the postseason, or the flip side of this is the entire history of the Buffalo Bills?
Okay, yes, no, yes to all the questions you asked. Yes, they're full value for 10-4. That defense is legit. Now, I know Devlin Hodges ain't nothing. He's not much, but, you know, he had four picks last night.
Your boy, Duck.
Now, two were late. I don't consider that a real four-pick night. I've seen four-pick nights.
Yeah.
I've watched Jameis Winston play. I know what a four-pick night is.
In a one-touchdown game, a four-pick night is a four-pick night.
Yeah, but when you're 2 minutes to go and you got to go to the end zone every time, you know, some things are going to happen. So I'm going to cut Devlin Hodges a little duck slack and say maybe it's not a real four-point night.
Careful with
careful
it.
Careful. Yeah. Second thing, do I think they're beating the Patriots next Saturday on NFL Network in Foxborough? No. Because that would be a statement. Because right now, even when the offense not looking good, the Patriots are finding a way some nights or some afternoons. Cincinnati, they didn't play well against Cincinnati, the offense. Do I think they can win a round? Yeah. The Bills, if they go to Houston or Tennessee in that wild card round, and let's assume that's how it's going to break down, the Bills are going to win that game. And for any Bills fan, please God, let it be Tennessee. Please God, let them go back to Tennessee.
Music City Miracle.
The last time the Bills had a 10-win season, by the way, was that season. The Music City Miracle season. Let this be a historically significant year for the Buffalo Bills. And let them go to Tennessee and make Ryan Tannehill eat it with a knife and fork before they give him an extension he doesn't deserve.
They're behind the eight ball. But I know you want the sweet justice of a Music City Miracle and the end of the Buffalo Bills or whatever the hell they were 20 years ago with Rob Johnson instead
of Doug
Flutie.
Well, that was essentially Doug Flutie's team. Then things changed for some reason. Not sure why till this day.
First round pick.
But things changed, I guess. By the way, Tim.
Should they have changed? No.
No, they shouldn't have. I was in the suite at the Score Television Network for that moment. I was doing the game.
Oh, you were covering the game.
I was covering the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up a diehard Bills fan. I know I've kind of mentioned this a couple times. Diehard. Four Super Bowl losses did not end that love, the romance. It continued.
Mm-hmm.
You know what did me in? That thing. The Music City Miracle did me in.
Not the four straight
nope.
Super Bowl losses?
Nope.
Not wide right?
Nope.
Not... You want me to rhyme off some
can
quarterbacks?
Can we stop with the Super Bowl?
Right,
I saw them all. I understand how they went.
Okay.
Should have beat the Giants in the first one. It all would have been different. Whatever. None of those ended my love for the Bills. The Music City Miracle broke my faith in Earth. And I stopped cheering for the Bills for a very long time.
Because that was so Buffalo?
Yep.
Right.
To me, that was the most Buffalo thing ever. At least in the Super Bowl, you know you're taking on a really good team.
Okay.
Tennessee weren't a really good team.
Okay.
I am feeling in my loins here, McAuliffe, that I want to get back on the bandwagon. And the wild card appearance a couple of years ago didn't even get me there. I was happy for them. But I wasn't coming in here waving pom-poms every day during the show. You know that.
Okay.
But I'm thinking about getting back on, but I'm hesitating.
Okay, before you make your decision, let me give you this.
I need help.
Tom Brady against the Cincinnati Bengals, 15 of 29 for 128 yards. I don't know if you know this, but the Bills' defense is a touch better than the Bengals' defense. The Bills and Patriots played in Buffalo, Orchard Park, earlier this year, and the Patriots needed a blocked punt for a touchdown to beat the aforementioned Buffalo Bills.
Correct.
The Patriots, before playing Cincinnati and everyone acting like 34-14 was 34-14, had lost two in a row. And they needed, speaking of four interceptions in the second half to ice the game against the Cincinnati Bengals, who watched Joe Mixon run all over them. They got five turnovers to beat the Cincinnati Bengals. Is there a chance, when we look at both of these teams side by side, without knowing the history of the Buffalo Bills and the New England Patriots? And the beauty of the New England Patriots is that they are always in the position to win. Is that because of their division is caca and they are afforded the time to figure it out each and every year? And this is not a caca Buffalo Bills team, even though the last time they beat a team above 500 before last night was week 5 against Tennessee?
Where are you going with this, McCallum?
I'm just saying.
Where are you, I'm close to falling in love again. What are you doing to me right now?
Tom Brady was 15 to 29 for 128 yards against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Correct.
The Bills' defense is better than that. They're banged up. He was missing open receivers. Julian Edelman does not look healthy. If the Buffalo Bills go into New England and get a win, is Sid Sixero back on the bandwagon? Because Tim McAuliffe sits here on December 16th, 2019, knowing full well the road is littered with people who have bet against the Patriots, and say, the Buffalo Bills have a chance on Saturday in New England on the NFL Network.
I say they don't. I say the Buffalo Bills know full well what that would mean.
That's easy to say.
Of course it's easy to say. I'm not playing the game.
No, because the Patriots are like, what, 5-point favorites already?
And they cheat.
I just made it up.
Well, you're probably right. I haven't looked at the odds.
I'll look it up. Dagan, you know the odds?
Dagan would know right
look
away.
It up for me.
Dagan makes
He'll
the
look
odds.
It up.
Are you kidding me?
He'll look them up for us. Don't worry. All right.
I want to be on your train. I want to put my suitcase underneath and walk on, sit down, and enjoy a nice lunch and take that train to positive land. But you know what? I can't get on the train. I don't feel good about it. Get a little motion sickness. I've had motion sickness with the Bills since 2000.
Okay.
Right? Since that lateral went the other way.
So have a lot of people.
Yes,
I understand.
I've had a lot of motion sickness with the Bills. I've lost a lot of weight. I can't.
Right.
Oh, New England 6-point favorite.
Six point favorite.
All right, look at that. Look at that. The smart money, Tim McCallum. I can't do this with you.
I'm a sharp.
You're sharp. Where's the sharp money gone? Where's the sharp money?
You follow McCallum to the sharp money.
His big shoe lock of the week, McCallum.
Remember that.
I can't do this with you. I can't go there yet. Could I get there eventually in a couple of weeks? Yes, I could. I can't do this now. I can't get my heart broken again. High school was rough.
This has not been a normal season for the New England Patriots. They have feasted on bad teams against the three first-place teams in the AFC. Do you know what the New England Patriots are? 0-3.
Really?
Okay? The Buffalo Bills are not a first-place team. But if they win that game, they win that game. The Patriots in Spygate 2.0, you mentioned the cheating. Jay Glazer.
Oh, this was the highlight. This was
another
the highlight
turn on
of,
Sunday.
This was the highlight, man, of my week. Jay Glazer released the footage to me that appears to show a member of Bengals security confronting the Patriots video crew guy over the filming of the Bengals sideline a couple of weeks ago. Here's a portion of the video and audio. Good. This is actually really comical.
And this is a piece you're filming on your advanced scout?
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, guys. I don't see the advanced scout in this footage.
No, it's not. We were trying to get some field perspective. That's my bad.
That's not the field.
I don't know why you would think you could take that.
I didn't know. I didn't know. can delete this right here for you.
Damage is done, my friend.
No, it isn't, because we delete it.
Once again, he once needed it.
It's gone.
22 yards left.
It's gone.
29 yards on the punt.
I can't get that.
29 yards.
Okay, yeah, that was the video that Jay Glazer and Fox released yesterday of a member of the Patriots film crew in Cincinnati doing something they should not have been doing.
Even better than the audio there. And I know it's hard for people to listen on radio, but he's basically saying, I can delete it if you want, guys. Guys, I can just delete it.
Is that immediate guilt?
And then it's gone.
Is that immediate guilt if you say, I can delete it if you want?
To me?
Yes.
Yes, that's immediate guilt. Even better was the statement from the Patriots producer who says, I've been in the business 20 years and I've been doing things to make content for... And he says, I was in the washroom when they... This is true.
Yeah.
He was in the washroom when they were confronted. I came back from the washroom. I didn't know they were filming the sidelines.
Well, he crapped all over himself when he saw that guy near his camera. I'll tell you that.
Okay, we don't have a lot of time here. Spygate 2.0 ends in what? Two first-round picks being taken away from the New England Patriots? Like, they're not getting away with this again.
$1.5 million team fine and two first-round picks.
That's what you think happens here?
They got they were fined $500,000 and $250,000 in 2007 with the Jets. They got fined $1 million for Deflategate, and Brady got four games for it. They got to up it. They're going to get 1.5, two picks. And I applaud the dude in the video from Bengal Security saying, the damage has already been done, my friend. I felt like it's a line from De Niro from The Irishman that should have been in the movie. The damage has already been done, my friend.
There was a lot of lines in that movie.
I barely got through it Saturday. Unbelievably long movie.
I watched it when I was sick on vacation. I swear to God, it took me like seven sittings.
I believe it.
To watch.
I don't know how I did it. My ass hurt. I felt like I was on a plane.
Big games next week. 11-3 Packers, 10-4 Vikings. That'll be for first in the NFC North. 7-7 Cowboys, 7-7 Eagles. NFC least on the line. That's 4:25 Sunday. Crazy. One of those two teams will be seated higher than wherever the Niners end up. And they're at 11-3 right now. Saturday, 10-4 Bills at 11-3 Patriots. And Saturday, 8-6 Rams, 11-3 Niners, depending on what that means to the Rams, who are basically done.
I'd rather watch Eagles-Cowboys than the Bills-Patriots next week. It's going to be so much fun. Desperate mediocrity is the most entertaining thing in sports.
Yeah, the Eagles are just banged the hell up, though, right?
No, yeah, I don't hate on the Eagles like I hate on the Cowboys. I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
All right, we're coming back with Chris Johnston coming up, Sam Amick. We're going to do the Taylor Hall deal to the Arizona Coyotes and talk about all this Raptor rumors that are spreading.
Look at all these rumors. Tell me every day.
Tim and Sid for radio and TV. Still to come, Sam Amick will join us. We will discuss some rumors surrounding the Toronto Raptors and their game with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Fred VanVleet will not play tonight against the Cleveland Cavaliers, which will include Tristan Thompson, who also, despite all the Kyle Lowry rumors out there, has been linked to the Toronto Raptors in the past. Speaking of rumors, one came true today. And that is Taylor Hall to the Arizona Coyotes.
A five-player deal total. Could be a couple of conditional picks also going to the Devils. Taylor Hall is now a Coyote. Chris Johnston of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca and Hockey Night in Canada joins us on the phone. CJ, it's great to have you on. Your initial impression of this deal was what? We're having issues talking to Chris Johnston.
No, hold on.
I can't hear.
Maybe he was speechless. By the deal between the Coyotes and the Devils, rendered very rare for someone on the phone doing an interview with two jackasses like us, but perhaps he was rendered speechless and or his call was dropped. One of the two.
Or option B. Let's ask him. CJ, you there?
Yeah, I thought I was traded to another network for a little bit, but
Oh, let's not do that. My initial question
who
to
do we
you,
get
CJ.
Back?
No, don't do that. I don't want a conditional anything. I want CJ here.
Yeah.
CJ, your initial reaction to this deal was what while we have you on the line?
I felt a little bit for Taylor Hall, to be honest, with the way everything unfolded over the weekend, sitting out a couple games, having to fly back overnight. With the team following their game in Arizona on Saturday and just the uncertainty. I think the Devils did reasonably well with the return in the package. I mean, this is a little bit unusual for the NHL. We don't see quote unquote, you know, deadline day rental type of trade made in December too often. And you know, the reason it did drag out is they were trying to up the offers and see what they could get back. And, you know, it sounds like they've gotten, you know, some sort of B-level prospects. I don't think there's any sure things in that group, but, you know, potentially getting two first round picks is a pretty good haul, you know, for a player that was going to walk out the door.
CJ, was anyone, I don't know, like Edmonton or Montreal close on Taylor Hall?
Good question, Tim.
Well, they certainly called on him. You know, I think Calgary was in that mix as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I know from the Oilers' end of things, you know, I just think that at this point in time, Ken Holland doesn't want to be trading away first-round picks. You know, it's probably a little gun-shy even on dealing from his prospect base because he's just taken over. And let's face it, that the team's had a pretty good start to the season, but they still have some depth issues there beyond their top-level talent. And I think that there's you know, there's a temptation where certainly Taylor Hall would look good in an Oilers jersey again and could help out that group tremendously. But the asking price, I think, on this trade, but probably even some others as we get closer to the trade deadline, is going to be, you know, a key thing that they're examining when they're looking at a move like this. So, you know, I think that certainly that the Flames and the Oilers are two Canadian teams that would love to have got Hall, but, you know, this just was a little bit beyond what they were comfortable paying to make it happen.
CJ, Rick Tocchet down in Arizona, he's having a good year. You know, they're one of the best defensive teams in hockey. They're atop their division. How will Taylor Hall benefit from playing with Rick Tocchet? How can Rick Tocchet kind of turn around the perception at times of Taylor Hall as an underperformer?
Well, you know, I think he might have left that perception behind a little bit when he won the Hart Trophy a couple years ago. You know, last season was an injury-plagued one. I think what Taylor's going to be happy with once he gets settled in Arizona is that that's a really good team. And, you know, what they lack in star power, and certainly they have a bit more star power now that they've brought in someone who's, you know, only 2 years removed from winning the league MVP award, is, you know, they've got a lot of structure there. Defensively, they play very well. Their goaltending's been solid this year. And if anything, you know, that was lacking, I think, is goals. And you know, I know Taylor hasn't scored a ton this year. You know, to me, a lot of that looks has always had some bad shooting luck that is, as long as you keep putting him in those positions, you know, you're going to see his goal total jump to, you know, more like 30, you know, where you're accustomed to seeing someone like him. And so, you know, I think getting to play in a winning atmosphere again is going to energize his career. And obviously, he's got a lot of incentive, too. He's still an unrestricted free agent. You know, he's not going to talk extension as part of this trade. I think he's going to want to take that to the summer. And so in the Coyotes, he's joining a team that certainly looks like it's on a playoff trajectory. And in Taylor Hall, that, you know, Arizona's getting someone who's motivated to play for his next contract and have a strong finish to this year and move on from what was a tough first, you know, a third of the way there in New Jersey.
We got less than 2 minutes left here, but I think that's the interesting part here is obviously New Jersey retaining 50% of the money owed to him is a tip of the cap that he is going to go to free agency. And obviously this is an interesting career. One playoff appearance, one Hart Trophy in his career. 9 coaches now in the 10 seasons in the show. Is there an idea of what Taylor Hall wants moving forward?
Oh, yeah, I don't know if we can say that definitively. I think certainly he wants to play for Stanley Cup.
Right.
And, you know, everyone says that, but when you go through 9 seasons as he has and never really sniffed it, I mean, even that Devils team that made it 2 years ago, they were a great Cinderella story, but, you know, they weren't kidding anyone that they were a team that could go on a run unless some really crazy stuff happened. So, you know, I think that obviously he's got to look after the financial side. I think he's open to different markets. You know, to me, he's someone who can play well in the Canadian market. I don't think that he feels as though he had to go to somewhere like Arizona, which is, you know, maybe a little bit less scrutiny from the media and the fans and those types of things down there. I think he's comfortable kind of in the pressure cooker, but, you know, the main thing he's going to want, in addition to padding his bank account, is a chance to win a Stanley Cup, you know, when it comes time in free agency. And who knows? Maybe the fit with the Coyotes is great. Maybe they go on a run. I don't think that's out of the question, given the way they played to start the year. And given what his top end looks like, and you know, he might have found his home already, but you know, I don't think he's going to know that, and they're going to know that until much closer to July 1st.
CJ, we got 10 seconds. Will the Cowboys win the NFC East? Yes or no?
Yes. I'm feeling good after yesterday.
Well, why not after a 7-7 record at this point?
Yeah, hey, you got to win over a team over 500.
I started that game in the fetal position, and by the end, I was like standing around like Superman. So yeah. I went the reverse of the way it usually goes.
That is Cowboys Nation in a nutshell. Yeah. Thanks, brother. We appreciate it.
Okay, boys.
This is Chris Johnson of Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Taylor Hall traded by the Devils to the Coyotes today.
Speaking of trades, there are some interesting rumors surrounding the Raptors. Mm-hmm. We'll get into it with Sam Amick next on Tim and Sid.
Time for Tim and Sid. It's time for real sports talk with Tim McCallum and Sid Sexero.
Thank you very much, Sheepdogs. Tim and Sid back with you for another 30 minutes on Sportsnet. Full hour on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto Hockey Central. Carolyn Cameron, Colby Armstrong coming up 6:30 Eastern on Sportsnet. And man, do they have a lot to talk about. A suspension just down on Joel Farabee. We'll tell you about that in a flash. And Taylor Hall is now a member of the Arizona Coyotes.
We thought Farabee was going to be the news of the day. Mm-hmm. We have new news of the day. That's where we begin the lineup, brought to you by Harvey's. Harvey's makes your hamburger a beautiful, beautiful thing. Taylor Hall all weekend long, two healthy scratches, Timmy. Everyone knew he was going to get dealt. It happened today. The Devils have traded Taylor Hall and Blake Spears to the Coyotes for Arizona's first pick in 2020 on a condition, which is top three protected, a conditional third-round selection in 2021, along with defenseman Kevin Ball and forwards Nick Merkley and Nate Schnarr. We've had about an hour or so to digest this entire move here, McAuliffe. We've hit a couple of angles. Where else do you want to take this?
I think this is a good move by the Arizona Coyotes to roll the dice on them, and I think New Jersey's doing the same thing with what they're getting back in return. The lottery-protected top three pick in 2020, let's be honest, Arizona is not projecting to miss the playoffs. Arizona is projecting for that pick to be late first round. So I like the risk that the Arizona Coyotes have taken. John Chayka, who is the GM there, a young guy who took a lot of heat when he got the job, says, I'll go out and get Taylor Hall, and I will try to make this work for this year. Because I don't know if you've looked at the standings, but the Pacific Division is wide open for the taking.
Yeah, whoever wants it.
And I think that's why you're hearing a lot of whispers in Edmonton and in Calgary about how much they wanted this player, because they look at the Pacific Division and realize that it is wide open for the taking. And the team in first in that division, by one point, the Arizona Coyotes went out and got Taylor Hall. And I wonder if in the end, John Chayka watches any basketball and has watched what the Toronto Raptors did with Kawhi Leonard a year ago when they dealt pieces for a guy on a rental for 1 year to see where they ended up. Because that's in the end what this is. And with New Jersey retaining 50% of the salary, why the hell not?
Well, it's a risk. But it's a risk the GM thinks is worth taking.
Well, but the risk is your third and fourth rated prospects.
Yeah. But in hockey, you never know.
You never know.
Like, hockey's weird that way. You know, like, it's not like baseball. It's not like the NBA. Well, there is no third and fourth pick in the NBA, but you know what I'm saying.
I would suggest to you that the prospects are even better in hockey than they are in baseball.
Yeah, they could. Well, there's more capital in them. Because people look at where they were picked, and people like, they're more of an asset, I find, in the National Hockey League, as we saw today, than maybe in other sports. John Chayka.
But only because 50% of their salary was retained.
Correct. That's why they got the prospect.
Yeah.
John Chayka, remember, he was the youngest GM in NHL history at 26 years of age. Mm-hmm. Youngest. So he is now in a position, which he quite frankly hasn't been in yet in his young executive career. He's in that wide open Pacific Division that you described. He went out and got Phil Kessel. He thinks they can do something here. He knows he has the goalie. We don't know if he has the goalie for a playoff run, but he knows he has a really good goalie, pretty good defensive team. Mm-hmm. Why not add a guy who clearly was going to move on for a specific price, but add a guy who was going to move on and see where it takes you? I don't hate the move for Arizona. With that said, though, I don't blame the Canadian teams for not wanting to give up the prospect capital that this would take. After some money was eaten on the cap. So.
And you need salary cap space to get this done. That's why some Montreal thought they had a shot, but they'll still have a shot in the offseason because it looks like Taylor Hall is going to go to free agency. Meanwhile, the NHL Player Safety the Department of NHL Player Safety, has issued a suspension for Joel Farabee of the Philadelphia Flyers. 3 games, interference on Matthew Perreault. As per usual, that does absolutely nothing for Matthew Perreault. But Farabee, who is kind of that guy, has been issued a 3-game suspension for what was a cheap shot on Perreault.
And here's the problem. Perreault is out with a concussion. He obviously didn't practice today.
Mm-hmm.
Out with a concussion. Who knows how long Matthew Perreault is going to be out. You got to be careful with these things. I'm not one to say a player's injury timeline should be tied to any suspension. I think that's ridiculous. You cannot do that. But none of this makes anyone feel good. I thought 3 was light. I would have given him at least 5 for that. He took a couple steps. What was it, like 20 feet between the two players by the time the puck left Perreault's stick?
Yeah, everyone knew what he was doing.
Give me a break here.
It was indefensible, right?
It was indefensible.
And that's 3 games in the NHL.
But that's what bothers me about, listen, I don't want George Parros' job.
No.
Who's the head of Department of Player Safety. I do not. That is one of the worst jobs, period. I applaud any person who says, let me take a crack at that. But I am stunned at how often this league screws it up. I don't know how else to describe it. That's easy 5. Easy. And at some point, you have to start sending messages to the rest of the league, which has been the NHL's issue in this department for decades. No messages really get sent unless it's on the evening news and it's some incident in Vancouver that the whole world is talking about.
Right.
And then you come down and look like the heavy.
Yeah.
But that's what bothers me as well. Hopefully Matthew Perreault comes back quickly. Matthew, best of luck to you, but it just leaves a complete sour taste.
But all you're asking for them is to value the health of their players.
Is it that hard?
I didn't think it was.
Is it that hard? Anyway, we're on the same page on that.
Maybe when we talk to John Chayka, we can ask him whether or not he watched the Toronto Raptors go out and get Kawhi Leonard for 1 year and how it ended up as he goes out and gets Taylor Hall. But speaking of the Raptors, they host the Cavaliers tonight. We've got it on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590 of the Fan, beginning with a pregame show at 7 Eastern time. Freddie Van Vliet ruled out tonight's game. He will miss his 4th straight with a right knee contusion. Cavs center and Brampton, Ontario native Tristan Thompson will make his first appearance in Toronto this season. And earlier this month, Sports Illustrated Sam Amico, different than Sam Amick, okay, who's going to join us in a flash.
Careful, well done.
Yeah, thank you very much. Said that the Raptors had high interest in Thompson. What do you make of that report, even though Michael Grange later kind of sort of poo-pooed it?
I mean, look, unless you're moving out the bigger bodies, unless they have a plan to move out Marc Gasol, unless they have a plan to move out Serge Ibaka,
mm-hmm,
makes absolutely no sense. Now, do I like any guy who can rebound for the Raptors? Yes.
Yes, you do.
And Tristan Thompson can do that. Mm-hmm. Is the fact that he's Canadian, should I put him at the head of the queue? I've never been convinced that's the case.
No.
You want the best players? I don't care where they're from. But if the Raptors are going to do something with their bigs, I am willing to accept this notion, because on the surface, I don't accept the notion. If it's roster as is, I don't really know where you go with this.
Yeah, adding $18 million to the roster to help you rebound, and let's be honest, the Raptors need help rebounding. They're 23rd in the league in rebounding differential. Last year, they were 14th in the league. I think you're right. This is plan B.
Definitely.
If they in fact decide that Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol's expiring contracts are worth what they can get back for them, then we'll start walking down the road of Tristan Thompson. Until then, hold on.
You and I earlier in the show played the clip from Adrian Wojnarowski last night on ESPN, mm-hmm, talking about the official start to trade season in the NBA, which began yesterday, which means that all NBA teams can now deal any player that they sign this past offseason. You had to wait. Is there everything all right?
I put my foot down here, and there's like fake spruce trees in where I put my feet.
Oh, decorations.
Yeah, there's...
That's what you're saying.
I think there's Christmas decorations that they're hiding. It's like a wreath by my feet, and now I can't put my foot down. Well, I can put my foot down.
You can put it down, but have a gentle... what is that? What do you call that? What's, like, if that's real, what do you call that?
Faux wreath?
Faux wreath? What is that?
What is this?
Kindling. Kindling. Yeah. Garland and or kindling is what was said in my ear. So your whole foot situation has been disrupted, is what you're saying.
I felt bad putting my feet where I normally put my feet.
Well, usually put your foot down in the show very quickly.
Yes.
But today you had issues with it because of the kindling, is what you're saying.
Is it sacrilege to put your feet on garland?
Well, not when it's at your feet, where you normally have your feet every day. No. Like, right. Tim has now put the garland or kindling or green stuff on his head.
I think it's garland.
Whatever. And looks like he won the first Olympics. Tim McAuliffe looks like he was literally in Athens way back in 1904, whatever it was, and won the 100-meter race.
You know what I'm wondering?
What's that?
Is there a mistletoe up in here?
Stop it.
You know what I'm talking about. Stop Zero. It.
Is mistletoe even legal anymore?
Blood out, yeah.
Can we do mistletoe anymore?
It's creepy.
No, I don't
it's always been creepy.
Like, mistletoe is not 2019. No, that is not a mistletoe holiday idea.
Now, mistletoe in your house, like husband and wife or partners, then mistletoe makes sense.
Right.
Any other situation, mistletoe is creepy as hell, without a doubt.
Yeah. Okay, full disclosure, I haven't had the best day. I think Tim put that on his head for me, because I love this man.
Yeah.
And he's trying to get me to smile, and I appreciate you. Kinda. I have to say, thank you, Tim. Kindling on your head on national TV and local radio, although I know local radio can't see it, but they can see it on social media later, is making me smile. I do appreciate
it. Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
If I competed in the ancient Olympics and received one of these wreaths on my head, which, by the way, is going to leave a mark when I take it off.
Like, your head's going to be red when you take that off?
Yeah. What event would I compete in the ancient Olympics?
Oh, for sure, it's discus. When I look at your frame, your traps, your general disposition, you look like a discus guy to me.
I thought you were going to go Greco-Roman wrestling on me, but whatever.
And because I know you like to do discus in the nude.
What?
Sam Amick.
That's how I do my traps.
Amick is joining us. Sam, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. That's a heck of an entry point. Nice to be with you.
Come on in the ancient Olympics.
Sam, before we get going, because you would always come on our show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan 1 to 4, and we've talked to you a lot down through the years. I feel that we have inadvertently mispronounced your name every time we've had you on. How do you properly, and I mean this in all sincerity because you've been awesome with us, how do you pronounce your last name?
I appreciate you asking. So it's, as my Uncle John used to teach me as a little guy, it's Long A. Amick. So Long A. Amick.
Amick. We should remember that in Canada.
A. Amick. Okay. Sam Amick joining us. Otherwise known as Good Peoples joining us. Sam Amick. Sam, so we are in the trading season here in the NBA, which is why we're talking to you. We appreciate you having us on. Let's start with the Raptors here. What are you hearing from a Raptors standpoint in terms of their situation? Do you think they will be the most significant players / non-players ahead of the February 7th deadline?
I don't know if they'll be the most significant. I think they are possibly the most interesting because the narrative, started early on, I think, in a way that nationally we did not anticipate, meaning we didn't think they were going to be this good without Kawhi, and so we were probably a little too premature in the media to start labeling them as if anything, buyers, not sellers, because they were in contention mode. But then next thing you know, if you lose 4 out of 6, like they have right now, and if you have a tough time with a really good team like the Clippers when Kawhi came back, and if that trend continued, then the arc, then it swings the other way. And then I think, that's the monitoring that's going to go on between now and the February trade deadline, with really the middle of January, to me, where, Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster and their group are going to get clarity here and decide what they want to do and who they want to be.
All right, I understand that a lot of people are trying to, they could try and stoke the fires heading into the trade deadline so that more people will read our articles, more people will tune into our shows, and more people will be engaged in the NBA trade deadline. But I see a lot of the national media suggesting that Kyle Lowry just might be the most tradable piece. Can you see that actually happening?
I could, yeah. I mean, for me, it's honestly, I'd probably take the perspective, back a bit in terms of a number of years. As accomplished as Kyle has been with this Raptors organization, I'll never forget that when Masai first went to Toronto, I think people assumed that, when it comes to DeMar and when it came to Kyle, that, these were guys that the Masai was so aggressive that roster was going to get turned on its head. And then ultimately that's not what happened. Then they re-upped Kyle, obviously gave him a very nice contract when the market didn't necessarily dictate, the kind of number that he got. It doesn't take anything away from what he's accomplished, but I've never kind of fooled myself into thinking that, that he was one of those guys where
Masai had him pegged as a Raptor for life, and I don't even think Kyle sees it that way. Kyle, every time I've talked to him about, you know, things like this, he's got a businessman's mentality. I think he knows that it's going to depend on what direction the team is going on the court, and that, you know, to a degree that he, you know, he's going to play a part in kind of determining his own future.
Considering the run the Raptors just had, Sam, is Masai Ujiri in the best position he's ever been to be in this type of position? And what I mean by that is just the value that potentially the rest of the league sees in these guys. Like, I'm sure people's perceptions of Fred VanVleet today are not what they were to start last season. How much of a position of strength do you think he's in after what happened last year from a trade standpoint?
He's in a great spot. I mean, that's always been his line. When you go back to trading for Kawhi in the first place and the, like, very important question of, you know, why wasn't he more concerned about what ultimately happened with Kawhi leaving? Like, the answer to that was that making that trade did not compromise their flexibility. And that's where they were in the catbird seat. And sure, he left, but you got a championship, you know, the first time ever in franchise history to show for it. That's a win. And then you're still sitting here with that flexibility and then with franchise centerpiece type talent in Pascal Siakam and VanVleet and guys that you want to build around. That part is great. And that's why, you know, I think it's definitely a whole lot of eyes on Masai and that group for the next couple of months.
Sam Amick of The Athletic joining us here on Tim and Sid. Do you think that Giannis is, Sid was giving me the thumbs up in the pronunciation. Yes. Do you think that Giannis is more likely to stay given the way the Bucks are playing right now?
I do, but the right now doesn't matter. I think the right – I was just talking to one of their people about this because I actually was a little surprised. One of the Bucks folks asked me today from a media standpoint if I was surprised that
– Hey, how's it
good? Nice to see you. You too. Sorry, gentlemen. I'm in the hallway here at the arena.
Who are you dapping up? Hold on. Who are you dapping up?
Details.
Yeah. Who is that?
That would be Jamal Mosley, Mavericks assistant coach.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
There you go.
All right.
He's the Luca whisperer. That's the
concept. He's done some whispering, I'll tell you that much.
He has. He's a whisper on that ankle. We get that thing right again.
He's got to get back.
It's a great question. The winning right now is keeping guys like, I'm just being honest, guys like me from making it a thing to talk about Giannis and his future more than we do otherwise. You know, if you lose games, then it's very easy from a media standpoint to start analyzing what does it mean. You know, then when we're talking to his agency and his agents and his people, you know, how are you guys feeling? Are you worried about this season? Now you get more headlines talking about, you know, what's going to happen here. When you win 18 in a row, it's just, you know, we're all human too. Like, it reaches a point where you know, you're going to give them a break because they're winning games. Like, what are you supposed to say right now? But it doesn't matter at all when it comes to his ultimate choice. They're going to offer him the Supermax this summer. You know, I don't even think he knows if he's going to take it, and it's all going to depend on, I think, what happens in the playoffs. So, you know, the games that matter, the wins that matter, obviously come in May and June.
Right.
Is this good for the league, Sam, to have this? And, I mean, fill in the name. It's either Kawhi or it's LeBron or it's Giannis. That guy, that franchise-altering guy, years in advance, have this be the discussion. Is this good for a league or is this bad for a league?
I think there's a threshold there. It's funny because, you know, I wrote that piece today talking about Kawhi and the impact that he's had on player empowerment and the unique strategy he took. You know, there's definitely owners and GMs in this league that think he took it a step too far, that, you know, kind of recruiting and going after co-stars who have multiple years left on their contract, that somehow, some way that should be out of bounds. The Giannis thing so far, I don't have any problem with, you know, whether or not it's healthy for the league. It's a guy who, it's 2 years away from free agency, a year and a half. But the reality is, if he chooses this summer, which is months away, to not take that contract, then as far as the way the league actually functions, like, guess what? That's when the Bucks GM, John Horst, you know, might start looking out for his own selfish purposes and saying, well, now with, like, Anthony Davis, like, we're going to trade this guy because we know he doesn't want to take the Supermax, and we can't lose him for nothing. But it's, you know, I think there's a threshold there. I think the league doesn't have most of the time any problem at all with the constant speculation about where their stars go. I definitely have a soft spot for the league at least having a handful of quote-unquote homegrown stars like the Steph Curry types that stay put and build legacies where they are. Every guy doesn't need to do that. I think it's great when the Tim Duncans come along. But, you know, that's not the way every guy wants to do it.
Sam Amick of The Athletic. Sam, fantastic stuff. We appreciate it. And the closer we get to February 7th, permission to bug you again.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Happy holidays.
You too. There is Sam Amick, who is in Milwaukee covering the Mavericks and the Bucks, and had Luka Doncic ended up playing in that game. Perhaps we would be talking about it differently with him today.
And for those going to the Bucks, Mavs and the Raptors is coming Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. No Luka Doncic.
Way to sell it.
Sorry.
We got some tweets in our opening segment about the Raptors and during this segment about the Raptors. And Tyson LeBlanc wrote in and said, regarding trades and just the Raps in general, I believe the extra year for Lowry was insurance because the window is closing and it's win now or rebuild for a long time. All for trading the young for championship now.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's around.
I don't think it is either. I don't think it is either.
I don't think that's a possibility.
No.
I think if anything happens here, it's not going to be that the Raptors are adding to this equation. It's going to be that they are trading those expiring contracts.
Well, with that said, Tim, who are we talking about here?
Kyle Lowry.
No, we're talking about Masai Ujiri.
Oh, sorry.
That's what I was talking about. Right. We're talking about Masai Ujiri.
Talking about the specific players.
Who I know, and we've already referenced ancient Greece kind of already in the segment, is I put him on a pedestal like some kind of Greek god.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he is actually capable of because he's already turned around a completely dormant franchise with move after move after move. Trial and error, but he got them there. I am not discounting anything that this man can potentially do. I don't know.
Niaz wrote in, and I think that he was referring to what I was talking about earlier about the American media pointing out that the extra year actually helped the tradability, if that is in fact a word. If not, I'm just making it up, of Kyle Lowry. And Niaz hit it on the head by saying, Masai signing Kyle and all these expiring are about flexibility to pivot any way he wants. Hashtag, I believe in Masai. Hashtag, he traded Bargnani away.
Yes, he did.
And that's what it is. He's given himself the flexibility to do whatever the hell he wants. And Raptor fans thinking that fifth is good enough, I'm not sure Masai Ujiri thinks the same way.
I guarantee you he doesn't.
I have talked to him long enough to know that it's championship or you lost. And that was proof last year when he traded for Kawhi Leonard.
Agreed, Timmy. Agreed. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. Get you set for the end of the show. Rich Gannon, who was in Oakland, by the way, for the last Raiders game in Oakland yesterday. That turned into a bleep show. We'll talk to him about that and a lot of other NFL stuff. And more of your reaction on the Kyle Lowry stuff from Woj. That's next here on Tim and Sid.
Tim and Sid Radio and TV. This is around the time we flip over to Just Sportsnet 360 on television. So if you want to keep watching us, head over there on the TV side of things. All right, kid, time now for what you are watching tonight, Sixero. The Sportsnet family of channels pretty busy tonight with Raptors at home to the Cavs on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 5, 9 of the Fan. We've got a pair of pretty good hockey games as well as the Oilers try and snap their four-game losing streak in Dallas, and two of the best teams in the West meet in St. Louis, Avs versus Blues. Monday nighter means a lot to both the Colts and the Saints. And to quote Sid Sixero earlier, the Mavs in Milwaukee with Doncic is worth watching, but without Luka, meh.
I don't know.
I know there's no Bachelor tonight.
Not till January.
Three's Company is on the Country Music Television Network.
PVRing it.
And The Mistletoe Secret is on City TV.
Hallmark movie.
So I ask you, what are you watching tonight?
Truth be told, I'm crushing the Hallmark movies.
No, tonight. You're not crushing the Hallmark
movies. You think I'm lying?
Do you really?
Welcome to Evergreen, Tim. Where a big city girl or guy comes in after going through the rat race, trying to figure out life, to a slower pace, to family, to snow, or fake snow in California or Vancouver, wherever they filmed it.
Right.
They find the old flame or a new flame.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely a single mom or dad.
And realize what's important to them. All along.
But not before Tim Big City calls them back and the editor of the paper says, I need you back here
yes,
to file this tonight.
Yeah.
Or if you go to Italy, if you go to Rome for Christmas and you close that deal, but your boss is saying, listen, Dave, you need to come back here. But you know what? They found something else. He found l'amore della città di Roma. I don't think I said that in Italian, but whatever. So I have been crushing the Hallmark. I'm not even lying to you. It's like sports and Hallmark movies. That's all I'm doing.
Piace love in Italian.
Piace love? But
is French, by the way.
To answer your question, the Cavs game. And future Raptor, Tristan Thompson.
All right. Hockey Central is next on Sportsnet. Tim and Sid, though, continues on Sportsnet 360. So if you got the flicker, head on over. And as always, we just roll on Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto. So we roll on, 6-0. You left the Monday Nighter out of the mix.
Unfortunately, I didn't mean to. I mean, the Colts and the Saints. Look, the Saints and the Packers and the Seahawks and the Niners, they're all in this I want to buy mix in the NFC come the first week of the postseason.
But this is the stay alive for the Colts, too. This is do or die, basically.
Yeah, do you believe in the Colts like that? Because I don't.
I don't know.
Do you think they're better than 10? I watched Tennessee and Houston for most of the early window yesterday.
Right.
Before I went over to our friend Scott Hansen at Red Zone. And I'm like, I don't see the Colts as banged up as they are at times. And I know guys are back, but they're not healthy. T.Y. Hilton's not completely healthy. I don't see them being as good as Tennessee or Houston. I just don't see it. And the clock is running.
I don't see them beating the Saints tonight. So that would be.
That's correct. Right. I'm with you. I don't see that happening either. I mean, so I like the Saints tonight big. It'll be a typical Drew Brees kind of evening. Four touchdowns. The thing might be over by halftime.
How much will the Niners come to regret what happened yesterday? They went from the one seed in the NFC to the five seed thanks to a ruling on Julio Jones, the goal line.
That was a crazy finish to the end of that game. But, Tim, if I'm the Seahawks, I'm not feeling much better. They lost Josh Gordon today to another PED suspension.
Yeah, he's gone.
So DK Metcalf, as good as he's looked, he better grow up real quick here, not just down the stretch, but come the postseason. It's like it's him and Tyler Lockett at this point. So if I'm the Niners, I'm super pissed at that yesterday.
There's a guy named Russell Wilson who's okay, and he's made a lot of guys look pretty good.
Yeah, I'm just saying. He needs help.
I know.
Throw the ball to himself, to quote Giselle. The Niners are pissed, Tim. You are bang on. They are furious at that. Mm-hmm. Atlanta are the most frustrating franchise maybe in the National Football League.
I would agree with the amount of talent
they can actually put out there and how inconsistent they are week in and week out. And I'm not even a better that way. I live in fantasy a little bit with Atlanta, and I know how frustrating they can be. But considering Seattle have question marks too, I think the Niners can recover from this, Tim. And next week they could easily be back at that number one seed. That's how crazy things are in the NFC right now.
Yeah,
they're nuts. Absolutely nuts. So that's what makes tonight's game huge. Saints can get the number one seed. Packers can get the number one seed. Who's going to get the number one seed? I don't know.
Before Rich Gannon joins us, and he's going to join us in a little while, former NFL MVP will join us to discuss what transpired in week 15. Who wins the NFC East? And, like, here's the deal for me. On paper, the Dallas Cowboys, given the injury, and I know Dallas has a couple injuries themselves, so Cowboy fans don't get all bent out of shape.
But not saying, like Philly.
Not like Philly. Dallas should be the better team in this division by a country mile, given the health of the Philadelphia Eagles, and yet there the Eagles are. Pulling out wins against bottom feeders in each of the last 2 weeks to stay relevant. And given the year and the way Jason Garrett's career has gone, you have given them a chance to win the division. And I look at this on paper and I say the Dallas Cowboys are the way better team. And I don't have the guts to say that the Dallas Cowboys are going to win that division, because each and every time you think that they have turned some sort of corner, they revert to what they are. And that is the Dallas Cowboys.
See, here's what I saw yesterday that would lead me to believe I can now believe in Dallas that way in terms of winning a division.
Okay.
Just winning a division. I want to underline that.
Well, and winning the worst division in football.
Worst division of football. There's a guy named Aaron Donald who was across from their offense yesterday, and the Cowboys ran for 260-plus yards.
Yeah, they ran down their throat.
That scares – listen, I know it's been a rocky road for the Cowboys this year, and they provided some good material to a lot of people. If they're going to start running the ball like that again, come late December, January, hold the phone, because that is one of the most important aspects of January football. You cannot lose often if you are near that level. I don't care what defense is lining up across from you, San Fran, whoever. So I see the Eagles surviving right now, and I understand why. If the Cowboys can keep running like that, Tim, they will win this division. No problem.
Yeah,
and I understand there's two games left.
That was the first win that they got over a team over 500.
Yep.
But when you consider the way it played out last year in the postseason, when it was the other way around, right? The Rams ran all over them in the postseason.
Correct.
They were held to just 22 yards in that game. Listen, Jared Goff, I don't know if he's not healthy or just not good, and people just got on the bandwagon too quickly with him. Maybe we can ask our next guest. But when you churn out 263 and allow 22, you're going to win a lot of football games.
It was a stunning number. It was the statistic from yesterday that blew me away the most.
Yeah, especially when you consider the way it broke down. And then the playoffs, for those who don't remember, they ran for a franchise playoff record. The Rams did 273 yards in a 30-22 win.
How ironic.
And then they run for just 22 yesterday, and the Cowboys control their destiny.
Tim, one last thing on what I'm watching tonight. Thank you to Mark at Tim and Sid for reminding me. Our good friend Jerry D in the Family Feud camp.
Oh, yeah, the debut. Tonight. How
Shout
did I miss
Jerry
that?
Jerry D. I missed it as well. Thank you, Mark at Tim and Sid. That's why Twitter is a friend of this show, because you can remind us of stuff.
I love Jerry D's burner account. Mark.
It's very it's not very creative. That's his burner account. Rich Gannon, former NFL MVP. He was in Oakland for the final Raiders game in Oakland yesterday against Jacksonville, is joining us on the phone. How you doing, Rich?
Guys, it's great to be with you.
Good to have you.
It's always great to have a former league MVP on the show. I do want to get to the vibe in Oakland yesterday, which is always unique, but especially unique yesterday. Your general thoughts, though, on the topic we were just kicking around in terms of how the Cowboys looked yesterday, how that running attack looked yesterday, and where things stand with both the Eagles psyche and the Cowboys psyche going into that game in Philadelphia next Sunday for the division.
You know, it's so hard to figure out what's going on in the NFC. So there's been so many disappointing games, and obviously the division isn't very good. But, you know, somebody's got to win it, right? And, you know, you bring up a great point. You know, the Cowboys got a good offensive line. I've been scratching my head all season. They've got one of the best running backs in football. And too many times you watch him, and he's not enough of a factor in the game. So I don't know if it's Jerry that's talking to the coach or the coach is talking to the young play caller, but to me, that's the key. They've got a good offensive line. They've got a quarterback that can be very effective off of play action. They haven't played complimentary football most of the season. You know, if you run the ball, then your defense isn't on the field as much. But, you know, I kind of like the Cowboys right now because you look where the Philadelphia Eagles are, but this is going to be a great one next week for sure.
I love what Russell Wilson has been able to do basically for his career, but I was going to add this year, and he'll probably finish second in NFL MVP voting to Lamar Jackson. But how much does this Josh Gordon suspension hurt the Seahawks, or can you trust in Russell Wilson to have enough weapons around him to do some real damage?
Couple things. It's definitely going to hurt because, you know, the guy's got size, he's got some speed, he's very good at the line of scrimmage, he's been a nice boost to them. So that it does hurt. You know, you lose a playmaker at this point in the year, and it's hard to get a young player up to speed who hasn't had the reps and the timing in the system. But that being said, there's no one I trust more than Russell Wilson. And you bring up a great point. I mean, if it weren't for Lamar Jackson, we're probably talking about Russell Wilson having an MVP-type season. Certainly he has the numbers. I mentioned earlier today, you know, he's rushed for 7 touchdowns, and he's got 300 yards rushing. You say, well, that's not a lot because Lamar Jackson's got 1,100 yards rushing, but it's the type of rushes. It's the third down runs. It's the, you know, running the ball in from the 7-yard line. He does everything. I always say he gets more with less. He's had an amazing season, but unfortunately no one's going to catch Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Rich Gannon here on Tim and Sid. Rich, after tonight, let's assume the Saints win tonight. I don't want to disrespect Indy, but let's assume the Saints win that football game tonight. 4-11 win teams in the in the NFC. 4-11 win teams potentially in the NFC. Of the four, Seattle, Green Bay, New Orleans, San Francisco, which one do you have the most questions about?
It may be New Orleans. You know, there's no question I trust the quarterback, but the defense to me, guys, has been kind of uneven, and that's the concern. I mean, you know, if they're able to play at home down there in New Orleans, they're going to be tough to beat. But when they have to go on the road in the postseason, if in fact they do, it's going to be a challenge with that defense. I don't know that the defense is playing as well as they were in the first 2 months of the season. And I always look at, you know, you talk about the best teams, it's the teams that get hot in December and carry that momentum into January. And, you know, San Francisco had a dud yesterday. You know, it's been a tough year to figure out the AFC and the NFC because, you know, we've had a lot of clunkers. Good teams don't lose two in a row. I do know that. No one's going to apologize. Aaron Rodgers said yesterday, hey, I'm not going to apologize for being 11-3. The thing that's so amazing about, you know, when it gets down to you know, the critical time in the season, I always defer to who are the best quarterbacks. And, you know, you look at Aaron Rodgers, his first year in Matt LaFleur's system, but here's the amazing number. I think he's thrown the ball 476 times, guys. He's thrown two picks. I mean, you know, he could be the MVP. I mean, he's had that type of season for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, it's going to be, and listen, Green Bay plays Minnesota, and you mentioned all the teams that have had their only losses at KC in this little run. Their only losses at KC, at Seattle, they've looked pretty good, and yet I look at Kirk Cousins, and I don't know whether to trust him, even though he's played the best football of his career.
I think you have to trust him. I was in the same boat a couple of weeks ago, but, you know, he's been so consistent this year, arguably – well, not arguably. It's his best season ever. You can go back and look at the numbers. And I think the thing that's helped him more than anything is the running game with Dalvin Cook. I think the other thing that's helped him, obviously, is Gary Kubiak. He's not the offensive coordinator. He's not calling the plays, but he's very involved in the game plan along with offensive coordinator Kevin Stefanski. A couple weeks ago, Mike Zimmer said it's the best thing that's ever happened to him. It's the best hire he's ever made, bringing in Gary Kubiak. It's the run game. It's the outside zone. It's the play actions. It's the boots and nakeds. It's those type of throws that Kirk Cousins is really good at and has a history of doing in Washington. And I think it's really been a perfect marriage, Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings this season with Gary Kubiak.
All right, Rich, I read these teams to my co-host last week, and I know that you are a quarterback, so I'm gonna throw this out there, but I love when teams are zagging while everyone else is zigging. And if you look at the top rushing teams in the National Football League right now, Ravens are number one, Niners are number two, Seahawks are number three, Vikings are number four, Buffalo Bills are number five. You could argue all five of those teams are surpassing expectations this year. Did someone find something with the running game that people had kind of gone away from a little bit this year?
Well, part of it is the quarterbacks, right? When you look at what they're doing in Baltimore, it's just not Mark Ingram. It's also Lamar Jackson, who's got over 1,000 yards rushing. You look at Russell Wilson, you know, he's contributed. You know, I think he's somewhere around 350 yards rushing. You know, I think that's a big part of it. But, you know, I think you've got teams that are built the same way, teams that have invested high draft picks in the offensive line. They spent money in free agency to address the offensive line. They've got good backs. They've got depth at that position where they can bring in the second back. There's not a lot of drop off, and they've got play callers that believe in running the football. You know, we talked about Kevin Stefanski in Minnesota. Greg Roman's done a great job in Baltimore. Kyle Shanahan, you know, his apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Mike Shanahan won a couple of Super Bowls with John Elway, running the ball with Terrell Davis. So, I know we're throwing the football. This is a big part of this league, but it's also running the football. And I'm not going to leave out the Buffalo Bills because the quarterback, Josh Allen, is a big part of their running package as well. And so it's not just the two backs, but it's also the quarterback that can contribute on a third down scramble, can run the football in with some of these design quarterback runs, some of these RPOs, the sweeps and the nakeds and those type of things that Josh Allen has been so good with this season in Buffalo.
Rich, before we let you go, again, you were in Oakland yesterday for the final home game before the Raiders moved to Vegas. Carr was booed off the field. It was a loss for the Raiders. It was just an interesting environment. But as a guy who knows that market pretty well, that organization pretty well, what were you thinking watching that play out yesterday?
You know, I was talking to my producer before the game, and you just said, look, Jacksonville's coming in with a rookie quarterback. They've lost seven straight games. You know, the Raiders, of course, have lost three straight games, but, you know, they had a lot more to play for. It was the last game at home ever in that stadium. And, you know, I just felt like, you know, they had a little bit more momentum than the other team. And they came out, they dominated in the first half. They moved the ball down the field, and they didn't finish in the second half. This is two straight weeks now the Raiders have played at home and have failed to score a second half point. I put a lot of that on the quarterback. You know, your job is to put the team in a position to have a chance to make plays late in games. They didn't do it. And, you know, he obviously had a call go against him. Derek Carr gets a first down, slides for the first down, and they rule him out of bounds and stops the clock with 2:05 to go in the game. That was a big mistake by the officials. And I'm tired of these big mistakes by the officials that they admit to a day later. It's just not good for our game. It's not good for the league. But regardless, you know, you can't the Raiders allowed Jacksonville to hang around, and then something bad happened at the end of the game. They missed a field goal. Jacksonville drives down the length of the field, and the Raiders' defense isn't very good. They're playing a lot of young players. But to me, yesterday was a real low point for the Raiders. I don't know how you lose a game like that at home with a veteran quarterback like Derek Carr. And Derek Carr, his record is what it is. It's not very good as a starter, but he's got to be able to generate more off-schedule plays, and that's what's really holding back the Raiders right now.
Off to Vegas it is for the
yeah,
Raiders.
You know what? It was a sad day for Raider fans. But Raider fans have been so loyal and so passionate. My sense is a lot of them are going to follow this team to Las Vegas. It's a new era in Raider football. It's a good opportunity, I think, for the Raiders to go down there, have a new stadium, a new facility. But it is sad. It was a sad day to pack up and leave that broadcast booth and that stadium for the last time.
Rich, as always, we love your candor. We love your perspective on this. Let's do this again soon. Thank you, sir.
You guys are the best. Thanks.
There's former NFL MVP. Sorry, Timmy. Rich Gannon.
We were going to say the same thing.
I know we were. It was because we're so excited to talk to Rich Gannon.
Brings great knowledge, does he not? Like, he knows what the bleep he's talking about.
But that's a guy. You know how it is. Like, you call a game with a guy.
Yeah.
It's not just that day. Like, that's your second wife. Right?
Yeah.
Like Rich Gannon seems like a guy. If I'm going to call games with someone.
Mike Morreale is
Mike
my second
Morreale was, yes.
Yeah, was my second wife.
I would, Rich Gannon's the guy I would love to call a game with week in and week out.
You're my first wife. And my real wife.
You've been busy. One day you'll meet your next ex-wife.
You think so?
All right. We have, I don't know. Forgive me for
that
talking
be
about
news to my current wife.
It's her, correct.
Right. Okay.
All jokes. forgive me as I awkwardly transition from that. A silly topic I was on, but we kind of have some serious slack-ish news from
National
normally
Hockey. We would go to the what we missed, and we play this fancy thing where a bunch of people yell into a microphone we missed. But I think that given the circumstances surrounding the story that is just breaking from the Chicago Blackhawks, that maybe you and I just talk about it.
Yeah, so let's go back a couple of weeks when the Bill Peters story kind of broke, Timmy. There were a lot of other stories. There was Brent Sopel from a Spinning Chicklets podcast about a year ago. There was Sean Avery criticizing and then uncriticizing Mark Crawford. Mark Crawford's name was coming up a lot.
Correct.
So a couple of weeks ago, Mark Crawford is taken off the bench as an assistant with the Blackhawks on Jeremy Colliton's staff, and there was an investigation by the Blackhawks. Today, we have learned that investigation is over, and he will be returning to the bench fairly soon. We have statements from the Chicago Blackhawks. We have a statement from Mark Crawford. I'm not going to read the entire one, but there's some parts in here that I do want to pick out, Tim. Allow me, if I may, and jump in after if I've forgotten something, because I might. So we're going to start with the Blackhawks' initial statement. Chicago and independent legal counsel conducted a thorough review of assistant coach Mark Crawford in response to allegations of misconduct in previous coaching positions. During this process, we engaged with Mark's former players, colleagues, and executive management. We don't condone his behavior. Through our review, though, we confirmed that Mark proactively sought professional counseling to work to improve and become a better communicator, person, and a coach. The statement goes on to say this. We have determined that Mark will remain suspended from team activities until January 2nd of next year, at which time he will resume his assistant coaching duties, subject to his continued compliance with his contractual obligations and team expectations. So that is a statement from the Blackhawks. Mark Crawford is back on their bench as an assistant to Jeremy Colliton on January the 2nd. We also have a statement from Mark Crawford himself. Said Mark, "Thank you for the opportunity to share my comments. It was important for me to respect the process. Recently, allegations have resurfaced about my conduct earlier in my coaching career. Players like Sean Avery, Harold Druckin, Patrick O'Sullivan, and Brent Sopel have had the strength to publicly come forward, and I am deeply sorry for hurting them. I offer my sincere apologies for my past behavior. I got into coaching to help people, and to think that my actions in any way caused harm to even one player fills me with tremendous regret and disappointment in myself. I used unacceptable language and conduct towards players in hopes of motivating them and sometimes went too far. As I deeply regret this behavior, I have worked hard over the last decade to improve both myself and my coaching style. So again, an apology from Mark Crawford in his statement, and an announcement from the Blackhawks in their statement that Mark Crawford, after the investigation, will be back on their bench as of January 2nd of next year.
Listen, I've said this before, but I'll say it again. Anyone who has ever played a sport at any competitive level knows that coaches can be a-holes. And most of us just looked at it and dealing with guys like that and women like that as a form of mental toughness. It was almost a part of the game. But that doesn't mean that the next generations have to deal with those type of guys. And I believe in leaving the world a better place than you found it. And if these guys, like Mark Crawford, who admittedly made mistakes in his past or felt like he made mistakes in his past, can rectify those mistakes, make good on them, and become better people, I'm all for second chances. I have said this time and time again. There are certain things that you can't come back from, and there are certain things that you can come back from. And I hope that this is one of those things that you can come back from. If you've made mistakes, you realize the mistakes, you go seek out those who you have offended in the past, why not be able to make retributions for what you have done? And to me, there is an important line between guys who have made mistakes and will try and be better because we're all human. And we have, I don't know the human that hasn't made the mistake, though sometimes Cicero claims to be.
I've done it four times in my life.
Right.
One so of those.
But we're all human. We all make errors. And if they aren't so far across the line, then going out and making up for those mistakes is actually a great human trait.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. The other part of this, Tim, I find really interesting is you and I remember Gary Bettman just last week down in Pebble Beach, California, talking about this for the first time, and he emphasized in a very stern way the vetting process has to change here. And the part of this statement from the Blackhawks, during this process, we engage with many of Mark's former players, colleagues, and executive management. Yeah. For them to put out this statement, they are pretty sure, legally, ethically, whatever, however you want to approach it, that there's not another story coming here, or there's not another piece of evidence coming here. So that, I, especially considering Gary Bettman's comments from a week ago, I find that striking.
Right.
That the Blackhawks are sure enough in what they have found or didn't find to put that on paper and have that be their stance. Because if something else comes up, I'm not saying it will. Hopefully it doesn't. But if something else comes up, Gary Bettman sounds like he's not going to have a lot of patience for teams that let things slip through the cracks. And keep in mind, we still haven't heard any finality of the Bill Peters Carolina investigation. We don't know what's happening there. That investigation, as of last week, is still very much open, according to the NHL. But there's a lot of interesting parts to this, including an apology for Mark Crawford. And again, that just dropped within the last 20 minutes, so we thought we'd pass it over here.
And when Gary Bettman was talking about it, he talked about, I don't mean coaches who are tough on players.
Because I think there's a difference.
Right. And he thinks that there's a difference, and it would be remarkably hard to try and find the difference. And like I said when we had the conversation about Bill Peters when I returned to the show, listen, if we can all start at racists don't belong in the game, and I hope that we're not too far gone to not start at that position, then we can have those conversations about people trying to get better. There are certain lines you do not cross. But if it's the line that's kind of sort of gray, and this was another conversation during that Gary Bettman press conference in Pebble Beach, was, well, where is the gray standing? Gary said, well, how the hell do I know until it happens?
It's a great question, but how do I know?
And as long as people are willing to let human beings make mistakes, then we're all right. As soon as we get to the point where you're no longer allowed to make a mistake, and we can all judge how big the mistake is or how bad the mistake is. But if we're no longer allowing humans to be human, then we're in a real tough place in society. Yep. And if a guy is willing to say, I made a mistake and I'm trying to make good on it, then I'm okay with it.
Yep. Again, Mark Crawford back on the bench next to Jeremy Colleton. January the 2nd.
But I'm not Sean Avery, or I'm not Harold Drukin, and I'm not Patrick O'Sullivan.
Yeah, you're speaking for you. Yeah,
right. And I understand it would be remarkably tough to have that sort of empathy for the guy who did it to you. But here is where we lie right now.
Can I spend the last 10 seconds talking about Hallmark movies?
Yeah, you want to get back to Hallmark movies?
It's just the same thing every time. I think I've seen the same set in 7 different movies.
Someone said Victoria is where they film a lot of them.
It makes sense. Yeah. Great scenery.